Thank you. One of the great pleasures of being superintendent of this great district is to be able to recognize the wonderful people that we have serving in so many different roles in our district. And my congratulations tonight go to all the honorees who are coming forward. My particular role is to honor the San Luis Coastal Administrator of the Year, Rick Robinette. We honor Rick first on tonight's agenda, not because he especially deserves it, but because this is actually his board item and we want to get him back to work as soon as possible. I have the pleasure to work with Rick, our director of personnel, by the way, on a virtually daily basis. And anyone who knows Rick has to appreciate the consistent courtesy, the reliable wisdom and common sense, and the absolute competence that he brings to his work. Rick is a person whose judgment is unquestionable and whose advice is something we all pay attention to. Gene Keller, who is Rick's personnel analyst, sent me, unsolicited, I might add, a background piece on Rick, noting that Rick joined San Luis Coastal in 1994 as the assistant principal at San Luis Obispo High School, where he also served as interim principal before becoming the principal of Los Osos Middle School in 1999. And Rick became our director of personnel in 2003. And I don't know if it is just me or whether all of this is only mildly interesting. I mean, really, we all had to earn a living during those years anyway. That just happened to be what Rick did. Rick gave me 2 minutes to talk tonight. And truly, what I really wanted to share, since I only have 2 minutes, is none of all that stuff I just did share. But to let you know some other personal things about Rick, that he lived as a bum in Fiji, that he's groomed his son to be a professional gambler, and that he once owned a killer monkey. I know what you're thinking, but he really is good with kids, too. Seriously, for that and the day-to-day excellence of Rick Robinette, please join me in applauding a great colleague and friend.
Dr. Valentine just said, now get back to work. So anyway, I think when I came up here 14 years ago, my wife persuaded me to apply for a job up here. And Mary Matakovich took a chance on me, an unknown, and I just have to tell you that it's been a blessing and a privilege for all 14 years. I've worked with the greatest students and parents and teachers and administrators. And now I'd like to bring up Pete Zotovich to do our next honoree.
It gives me great pleasure and pride to introduce this year's Clerical Employee of the Year, Marilyn Behrens. For over 25 years, Marilyn Behrens has held the position of attendance clerk at Morro Bay High School. She makes it a point to know every student and their parents that attends our school. She has worked very hard at establishing a positive contact with students and parents, and because of this, of the rapport she's built with them, about 95% of our parents of students who are absent call and talk to Marilyn to let her know why their student is absent. And I remember that one time I finally did have one of my children that went to Morro Bay High School late one day, and she walked down to my office around 9 o'clock, and instead of saying, she just kind of looked at me, and I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and she said, "Well, where is he?" And I realized, oh, he's homesick. I'm sorry. By the end of each day, Marilyn has called all the parents who have not called her. Many times, the parents did not know that their child was absent, and in many cases, we find that the students have cut either their class or school. Parents are very appreciative, and students are very hesitant to cut because they know Marilyn will call their parents. Marilyn, with her incredible work ethic, keeps students in school and learning. She has given countless in-services to other schools in the district because of our truancy rate is so low and our attendance is so good. She has put in place, with the help of our dean of students and her co-workers, a fantastic model of an attendance office that works for students and parents and keeps students in school. I have never met a more devoted person with the goal of making sure that all students come to school on a daily basis. Marilyn also works very hard with each of our teachers to make sure that their attendance is the most correct that it can possibly be on a daily and yearly basis, and sometimes that can be a chore, even for the principal sometimes. Marilyn knows information about each family that is vital to our counselors and administration. She knows what is going on in each home and communicates information that helps us understand why students are acting out. Additionally, Marilyn is our nurse when the nurse is not on campus. When a student is injured on campus, we know that Marilyn will be there very shortly, in a very short time, to bring the student back to the officer to help with the call to 911. She does an excellent job managing the care of our students when they are sick or hurt. Marilyn has also helped us organize our student assistance program groups for students whose parents have died or are going to die. She has worked with hospice, Morro Bay and county sheriffs, probation officers, and other agencies. She is a very student-centered person who lives in our community of Los Osos and Morro Bay and knows our students and their family very well. Finally, Marilyn is respected by our entire staff, and they all know that she does a fabulous job this semester and so they can become a responsible student. Her sincere, caring attitude for our students has earned her tremendous respect from students, parents, our community, our district, and our staff. And once again, it's my great pleasure to introduce and to congratulate our clerical employee of the year, Marilyn Behrens. Congratulations. Yes, and this is to you too.
It's an amazing thing to work with colleagues who trust, who encourage, who support, our administrative staff, Pete and Bob and Dan, put a lot of trust in folks, and it helps us to grow. The other thing that is truly amazing at Morro Bay High School is the intentionality of relationship. My family doesn't live here. If you are employed at or part of the Morro Bay High School family, will you stand up? These are my sisters and brothers. And it is amazing to work in a place where people work on relationship, where you know your back is covered. If I need something, someone is there. If someone needs something, I'm there. And I thank you all for this honor. I thank the selection committee and those who nominated me. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Diane Frost, and I'm the principal of Los Osos Middle School. And I'd like to present Mr. Jerry Dunlap as the Physical Support Employee of the Year. Jerry, will you join me? Jerry Dunlap is the lead custodian at Los Osos Middle School. Due to Jerry's amazing work ethic and skills, we have one of the cleanest middle school campuses you will see. Jerry has an amazing eye for detail on our campus. Litter is immediately removed, as is graffiti. Jerry truly takes pride in the look and appearance of all aspects of our campus. Our lunchroom is spotless immediately after the students leave. The hallways are litter-free when Jerry is around, and classroom maintenance is a high priority. Jerry models a positive attitude and uncompromising work ethic in everything he does at Loam's. He is immediately responsive to all requests from administration, staff, and students, and happily completes even the most mundane task. When our heaters were out in the office and classrooms, Jerry arrived early each morning, checked the heat level in the affected rooms, started space heaters for the coldest of classrooms. A couple of hours later, when the teachers and students arrived, the rooms were ready for learning. It's not unusual for Jerry to get 15 calls a day to help a student with a stuck locker, countless calls to address spills on campus, and constant contact concerning specific needs of teachers in their classroom. Can you imagine getting that many contacts in one day? Well, most people would show frustration. Dollar, exactly. Our students have really learned about responsibility through this process. Like all middle schools, we have a variety of educational needs among our students. Over the years, Jerry has fostered close relationships with students with the greatest academic need. Relationships have developed as these students interact with Jerry on campus. These students are so comfortable with Jerry, and the connection is so close with these students that Jerry has been known to attend their community basketball games on the weekends. Jerry has also been known to contact the custodian at the high school to foster the same relationship as the child moves on. Jerry also makes a point of getting to know the students individually and specifically makes contact with new students on our campus. He'll suggest clubs and sports for the students to join or simply chat with the student during breaks and recess if he sees them sitting alone. Finally, Jerry was the hero in our back-to-school staff and student skit 2 years ago. The students portrayed him as the locker doctor. He was the hero of the skit who could solve any locker problem that arose. The students absolutely loved the characterization. Jerry is friendly too and well-liked and respected by all staff members. In addition to his responsiveness to all campus needs, Jerry participates in staff events, including nutrition treats and staff luncheon. He's known among our staff for his amazing homemade jerky, and even participated in our carrot cake competition in 2006, our fudge competition in 2007, and our cheesecake competition in 2008, and they're usually very interesting recipes. While he seldom wins these culinary competitions, his positive attitude and jovial acceptance of his losses endear him to the staff. We appreciate absolutely everything that Jerry does for the Loam's community and think he was the perfect person to be honored as a physical support employee of the year.
I'll just say that this is the first job I've ever had in my life that I actually look forward to going to work every day. And it's because of Diane Frost and Terry and the whole staff, the kids. It's just a great deal. It's something I wish I'd have done a long time ago. I tell people that I'm the lunch referee, and they think I'm nuts. But it's fun. Anyway, thank you very much. And that was Chase, my grandson here. He wanted to come out.
My name's Rita Delkiskamp, Director of Instructional Services and Special Projects, and I have a special project tonight. It's an honor tonight to present Barry Penley as our District Support Staff Person for 2008. Barry, could you please join us?
Uh-oh. Yeah, you're right. Uh-oh. Yes, we're here tonight to present to you Mr. Penley. And I'm especially pleased to share with you the board. In 86, Barry served at four different elementary schools as an upper grade teacher.
Boy, he really has been wandering around.
Did you know that in 1986 he was selected for his current position as the teacher on special assignment for curriculum, assessment, and professional development? Okay. Did you also know that in this assignment, he's been known to be the sole supplier of mulberry leaves for our district's caterpillar science units? Did you know that, Rita?
You know, come to think of it, I have heard some whispered tales of his searches throughout our county.
Yes, and we even have evidence of that, don't we, Cheryl? Yes. We wanted to be sure that we had the results of his labor.
Since we adopted Fossey, then we picked a whole bag of mulberry.
Thank you so much.
So did you know, Rita, that he actually dresses up as a trapper and reads to students with while sporting his Davy Crockett cap?
I saw him this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you also know that he will create an assessment for any teacher who's willing to work with him and use the results to support their students' learning?
Yes, and I hear he has a special name for this technique. He refers to it as the bait and switch technique because he wants us to be able to adjust our instruction and ensure that all of our students are getting caught up in learning.
That's right.
Pretty good, okay. Did you know that he hand draws and colors charts of all shapes and sizes in order to help simplify difficult projects for our staff in services?
Yes, I've witnessed this. I think he kind of shows them to me, and if I get it, then everybody else will.
Did you also know that no question is too small for him to research, and he always gives you an answer that is understandable using his unassuming, gentle approach?
Hello, this is Barry. May I help you?
100% of the time. And did you know that he always brings up his much exaggerated fishing tales at every opportunity he gets? And that through his stories and his lessons, he's taught us many, many things. He's taught us how to learn and how to fish for ourselves. And so, Barry, you've always been looking for results of our learning, and so we have some evidence from your colleagues, our fish. So instead of a bouquet, he gets a bouquet of fish representing his tall tales, but our thoughtfulness to him, to thank him for your dedication and commitment to our children. So, Barry Penley.
Thank you very much. I'm really glad you didn't bring up my messy desk. So that was, I thought, true.
And the wonderful presentations. And I just wanted to note before we have our student presentations about how personal everyone's story is relative to their commitment and their connection to their school site and what they do in the district. It's not just this is what they do. It's this is who they are and this is what they mean to me. And to myself, that means so much when you hear about the relationship. So thank you all, the winners and also people who were nominated tonight. Just for the record tonight, in the physical support area, Terry Fosmeyer, Dan McShane, Rick Stimson were nominated from their respective schools. In the school support area, Kathleen Benedict, Kathy Chavez, Marvin Petch were nominated for these awards. In clerical, Janice Aldworth, and in the administration area, Jackie Kirk Martinez, Bonnie Parsons were nominated, and I think we can thank all of them and all the others that make their jobs so important for the students and the staff and the curriculum. So thank you all. And Dr. Matakovich, are you going to introduce the presenters for the next?
Please,
thank you very much.
Yes, we're pleased tonight to recognize our Morro Bay High School and San Luis High School students who have achieved great honors. in the areas of National Merit Scholarship, Skills USA, Ford Troubleshooting, and Future Farmers of America. We'd like to begin with our National Merit Scholars, and Mr. Jones is going to introduce his students, as well as Mr. Zotovich his.
Thank you very much, everyone. It's quite a night of celebration, and there's one thing that's not on the agenda that I think we should celebrate. I don't know how many of you know this, but today is Pete Zotovich's birthday, so I think we should.
And I would also like to mention that it's Mrs. Dickinson's birthday also. We share a birthday.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to honor our National Merit Scholars this evening from San Luis Obispo High School, both of whom have been awarded National Merit $2,500 scholarships. In the agenda item, it mentions that how students qualify, and I might point out that throughout the country, there are 2,600 winners all over the United States. There are 1,000 high schools in California alone. So for there to be two National Merit Scholars at one high school in our district and another National Merit Scholar at our other high school speaks volumes about our students, our teachers, and the programs that our students participate in. So I would like to first introduce the two National Merit Scholars from San Luis Obispo High School and have them come up, Samantha Alford and Gordon Freirich. I'd like to say a little something about each of them. Samantha is currently the editor-in-chief of Expressions, our school newspaper. She's also a member of the law school or to in any other profession that would be honored to have her. So congratulations to Samantha, and Dr. Valentine has a certificate to present to her. Gordon Freirich is a founding member of both the Debate Club at San Luis Obispo High School and the Red Cross Club. He is currently vice president of the Auto Club, and he was a member of the Tech Club for 3 years. Gordon's many honors include AP Scholar with Distinction, National Hot Rod Association Challenge first place in 2006 and second place in 2007. I'm not going to spoil some of the other honors that Gordon will be awarded, recognized for this evening. But I am going to say that I'd be willing to bet that Gordon is the only National Merit Scholar who is also an automotive state champion. Gordon, the last time I spoke to him, had accepted a scholarship to Arizona State University, where he will study mechanical engineering. So I'm very proud to present these two outstanding San Luis Obispo High School students and National Merit Scholars.
I was thinking, can we keep the students up for the Morro Bay students so they can all be together?
Sure.
Will they stay up here? So your compatriots from your sister brother high school can all be with you too? Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, because of the schedule at Morro Bay and the things that have been happening in the last few days and some of the testing that's coming, our students that were not able to join us tonight, our national merit recipient is Darlene Rappaport. And she is going to go to Cal Poly next year, and she is going to major in landscape architecture. We also had six commended students. These are the students that got within the 50,000 of the 1.3 million students that took it, so I'd just like to read their names. Phoebe Burley, Kira Charlesworth, William Chestnut, Audrey Hollis, Alex Moreland, and Michael Swadner. These are just fabulous students that are in our class, in the senior class. And we just really congratulate Darlene for the fabulous work she's done as one of our top, top students at Morro Bay High School. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Karen Lopez from Pacific Beach High School, welcome.
Yes, and it's my privilege to serve as the district ROP coordinator, and ROP stands for Regional Occupational Program. And tonight, Pete Sotovich and Will Jones, the principals of Morro Bay and San Luis High School, will be introducing to you career technical education teachers, teachers of ROP programs. And these teachers also serve as advisors of the career technical student leadership organizations. There's several of these organizations you'll be seeing and meeting students from two of the organizations. One is the Skills USA, which is affiliated originally with industrial technology, but has broadened their focus a little bit so that they have activities and competitions in other areas as well. The second one is FFA, which is affiliated with the agricultural programs. These are co-curriculars.
And last year we had a national merit, a national medal finalist. If I could, I'd like to introduce Liz Moore and Donald Rupucci.
The students from Morro Bay High School in my areas. I had four students, two teams of web design that won awards, and one photo student that won awards. So Tyler Horgan, come on up, and Chris, come on up, Chris Sotovich. And Tracy White. Web design is a competition that competes in teams, and the other half of Tyler's team is Jenny Gosnell, and she's not here right now. But Tyler and Jenny won the silver in the web design contest, and I can't say enough about this team. This is the second year they've been competing. They're fabulous together. Tyler is the one who codes the pages, and Jenny is a great artist. She can just whip up a web page in no time. And their skills together have won them the silver award. Tyler was going to go on and be going to the military after he graduates. And presently, he's running his own web design business. So if any of you need a little web work, please see Tyler. And then I have Chris. Come on over here, Chris. Step up. Chris Zedovich is part of the Mike Ion and Chris Zedovich team. And Chris was the great, fabulous designer. He's got a wonderful sense of color and typography. He's great with flash animation. So he was the artist for their team. And Mike Ion was the one who coded and did a little more of that kind of work. I want to mention that Mike Ion and Jenny Gosnell redesigned the Morro Bay High School website this year. So Chris and Mike won the bronze medal in web design. And this is Casey Weiss, and this is his first year competing in Skills USA. He got a third in photography. What I'd like to tell you about Casey is how energetic he is with his photos. Their assignment was to go to Fresno and take pictures as if you were wanting businesses to come to Fresno. And, you know, I don't know about Fresno, but the only thing I was allowed to do was drive them places. I couldn't really advise them. But so, you know, I let the photographers go out, and I got a call. And I looked at my map, and where were they? They were at the hospital. They had talked the doctors and nurses into letting them take their picture. And then the next time the call, they found the tallest building in Fresno, and they were on top of it taking pictures. So with Casey's ingenuity and enthusiasm for photography, he won a bronze medal in photo.
Two of my students, David Richenberg and Anthony Vinci, were both gold medal and silver medalists. First of all, David is the gold medalist in introductory woodworking. This is the second year in a row that Morro Bay High School is number one in the state in introductory woodworking. He built in 4 hours where everybody else took six. He built an entire tool chest with tray without any power tools at all. It's quite an achievement.
This is a lot of fun. I'd like to introduce our three Skills USA coaches who had their students participate this year. Jeff Lemkuhl in automotives. Jeff, I think his reputation precedes him. You've seen him here for many honors and distinctions with both as a coach and for the great things he's done with the students over the years. So, Jeff, if you'll come up, please. And also Jan Fecho, who works with our computer students. And all I can say about Jan is that she knows more about computers than anybody I know. And if it weren't for Jan, we simply would not be able to maintain all the computers at our school. She does an amazing job for us. Jan Fecho. Okay. Jan's not here tonight, unfortunately. Then I would also like to introduce Tim Fay. Tim Fay is... has many, many abilities. He teaches drafting, he teaches metal, he teaches welding, he teaches ag mechanics. And I think pretty soon Jeff's going to be looking over his shoulder because Tim is gaining on him in skill and reputation. I'd like to just say that Tim is one of the finest young teachers I've had the pleasure of hiring in my 6 years as principal at San Luis Obispo High School. So I'll have them introduce their students.
I'm going to go ahead and let my guys introduce themselves and just tell you what they competed in, and then I'd like to say a little word about them. So,
I am Jesse Castaneda, and I competed in introductory computer-aided drafting, and I placed second at the state competition.
I'm Nick Benedetto, and I competed in the combination welding at Skills USA and got a gold in that and get to go to the national level this summer.
Yeah. Mitch Madrid, I got a gold in MIG welding at Skills.
I'm Tony Jennings, I got a bronze medal in shielded metal arc welding. The Skills USA.
Okay, well, I'd just like to say that these this good-looking group of young men here have worked really hard this year to attain these awards, and we started off the welders as the first year we've done this, and so I said, you guys are going to have to work hard because we're not going to show up at this thing and look like we don't know what we're doing, and it worked out pretty well for these guys, and Jesse came last year and did some hand drafting, and this year came back on the computer. And all these guys are none of these guys are seniors, so you'll see them again next year, hopefully.
I'm Jeff Lemkiel from San Luis High, and I just want to say it really is a privilege to work with Mr. Fay. He's a huge addition to our staff. Everybody thinks so. I'm already looking over my shoulder, and... he actually has done an amazing thing in our metal shop and our welding. We are absolutely thrilled. Tim gets to accompany him, and then I'll be accompanying my students. So we're really glad for them. So I think they deserve another round of applause myself. I want to introduce Gordon Freirich, who you already know is a National Merit Scholar, which I have a couple stories about. And Cyrus Dalal. Come a little closer, you guys. Cyrus won the gold medal for automotive service technology category at the Skills USA contest this April in Fresno. And Gordon won the silver medal. It's true. That's a bronze medal on his chest. He left his silver medal at home. So anyways. But it's kind of nice that you're willing to recognize these boys tonight because there was a mix-up at the contest, and they accidentally awarded the gold medal to a community college student. And Cyrus was awarded the silver medal and Gordon the bronze. And to these boys, these young men's credit, they were like, everything's great, we're thrilled. And I'm kind of like going, yeah, but only the gold goes to the Nationals. And I was sure, he got fifth place last year? He got fifth place in the state contest as a junior. So I was pretty sure that he was going to win. And it turned out they had awarded the wrong award. So, anyways, this is their opportunity to get acknowledged for first and second at the state contest, which is quite an achievement. This is our third year in a row we've won the Skills USA state contest. And just to give you just a quick glimpse into the contest, Honda Motor Corporation was there, General Motors. These guys had a six-hour contest. It's probably one of the longest ones that's at the contest. They had to troubleshoot a 2008 Corvette, They had to troubleshoot a 2008 Jeep Wrangler. They had to troubleshoot 2008 Mercedes-Benz and a 2008 Honda Civic or Accord. I can't remember. And in addition to about six other stations. And they finished first and second, so it's quite an honor. Cyrus gets about a $25,000 scholarship to Universal Technical Institute, which is a private automotive school, and he's at this point tentatively planning to attend there. And Gordon just gets an awesome attaboy. Do I get it? There you go. Thank you very much.
Mr. Lemkuhl, you and your students are going to have to do an about-face and come on back up to the lectern here. I want to introduce Jeff one more time because he will tell you a little bit about Cyrus and Gordon one more time because they are the Ford AAA troubleshooting state champions.
Credit where credit's due. You know, Jody Evans is the one that got us to hire Tim Fay. So that's just something else I'll throw in there, Jody. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. Gordon and Cyrus won the Ford AAA Automotive Troubleshooting Contest just a week ago Friday. Yeah, a week ago Friday down at Irwindale Speedway in Southern California. And this is our first time we've ever won the state contest back-to-back. We won the state contest last year. This is our fifth time winning the state contest. So to get judged and you automatically are out of the running for the final. At 84 minutes, they shut their hood, started the car to go into judging, and shut the car off and got out of the car. And I'm just like, what is going on? And by the way, you need to know, we were the last team out there. And we're the defending, second to last, and we're the defending, not only state champions, we are the defending national champions. And I'm going, we're last. And so they get out of the car, get the scan tool out, interface some problem with the airbags, as it turns out. Cyrus and them, they figure it out, they clear a code, shut the hood with 4 minutes left, go into judging. We win the contest because we're the only team that fixed all the problems. In fact... In fact, out of the 20 teams in California, we were the only team that fixed all the problems out of all 20 teams. And that trophy that Gordon has is the first place trophy. Cyrus has a trophy because we also won the honor for the high score written in the state. There's a written test that qualifies you. And for me as a teacher, I always take a lot of joy in the written score because it's the hardest thing to do is to get them to study on their own and really buckle down. Have you ever had to coach a National Merit Scholar? I'd like to tell you just for a moment about that. It's like at first, when we first start out, you know, a car is a weird thing to a guy like this. And he looks at, all he sees is like 25 onboard computers. That's all he sees. And I'm going, it's got spark plugs. It's got other things besides computers. So once I got Gordon to, whenever we had a problem with the car, he would go straight for the most difficult thing. He's like, Mr. Lemkuhl, I'm talking to this computer with the scan tool, and I just don't. And I said, Gordon, just cycle the key, reboot the scan tool. Everything's going to be okay. Anyways, had a lot of fun with them. So we're off to Dearborn on the 21st, and we fly straight to Kansas City so Cyrus can compete in the Skills USA National Contest. I mentioned that Cyrus is going to Universal Technical Institute tentatively. And I don't know if Mr. Jones said this, but Gordon has a full scholarship to Arizona State University with some money to spare, if I'm not mistaken. Thanks very much.
Mr. Zotovich?
Last but not least, we have our FFA students that we'd like to introduce to you tonight. Unfortunately, our FFA banquet is this evening. So right now at Morro Bay High School, they've got some pretty good eats going on and some great program, but unfortunately they're not able to be here. So I just would like to introduce our Golden State FFA degree winners, and they are Lauren Brashears, Melissa Durham, James Wagner, and Alice Warren. And our FFA interview contest winners, Lauren Brashears, Melissa Durham, and Angelina Salos. Thank you.
I just want to say that Jeff may have had his doubts, but back here in San Luis Obispo, we just wait for the phone call. And it comes in. We won state again this year, Will, and I say, way to go, Jeff. Thanks a lot. We knew you could do it. You know. No, we're not spoiled. We're really proud of Jeff and the students. It's been an amazing few weeks at San Luis Obispo High School with the success.
Thank you. I'm Jody Evans, and I'm the department head for the San Luis Obispo Agriculture Department. This is my teaching partner and her yet-to-be-born child here, Anna Bates. First, I'd like to bring to the podium Kenna Lewis. Kenna Lewis is going to speak on behalf of her sister, Caitlin Lewis, who participated in the Prepared Public Speaking Contest at the state level.
My sister, Caitlin Lewis, was one of the top two finalists in the state to compete on stage, and she did a prepared public speech, which was 8 minutes long, and she had to answer 5 minutes of questioning in front of over 5,000 FFA members. And the results were that she got first place and gets to represent California as our state winner for prepared public speaking at Nationals in Indianapolis, Indiana.
What some may not know is that in Indianapolis, only one person from each state gets to represent their state, and Caitlin is going to be that person representing California FFA on behalf of San Luis Obispo as well. And we were very nerve-wracked while we were there because the prepared speaking contest is supposed to be a 6 to 8 minute speech. However, as we worked with Caitlin and she became more confident and actually a better speaker, her 6 to 8 minute speech actually became a 9.5 minute speech, completely rehearsed, recited, and well-spoken. However, she had done all of the research herself, and her topic is on farm subsidies, and she could probably lecture all of us on the farm bill and farm subsidies and explain to us the standings on the different legislators in the different states. So we have to make some tweaks to the speech a little bit because when she goes to nationals, anything over 8 minutes will be penalized by point deductions. So we would like to congratulate her on her behalf, but she could not be here today.
Hi, I'm Anna Bates, as she introduced me earlier. I'd like to call up here, first of all, my representative from our Ag Issues team, Aaron Flores. This is the second year California has adopted this contest, and it's the full name is Agricultural Issues Forum. And the students this year, this is the second year we've done it. Last year we got second, and this year we got first and became state champions. And as well as with Caitlin, our team of five, the other four couldn't be here tonight as well. They're kind of overachievers and at Cuesta taking classes and doing things. So they will go to Nationals in Indianapolis and represent the state of California for agricultural issues. And I will let Aaron explain to you just a little bit about what that is.
Well, the Ag Issues Competition is a competition where each team selects a current issue that's affecting agriculture, and they are to prepare a presentation that is 14 minutes. And what they have to do is present both the pros and the cons, so both sides of the subject, but they're not supposed to take a position. They're only supposed to present both of the viewpoints. Then after their presentation is over, they...
In the fall, so... And then the other team that we have that were also named state champions is our novice parliamentary procedure debate team. So would you guys come on up here, please? I'm going to let them introduce themselves, but there are two that are missing tonight. But the one thing I will say for some of you that don't know is that the novice team in this category can consist of both freshmen and sophomores that have never done this debate contest before. And our entire team this year were all freshmen. And in the finals of the state of California, all the other teams were mostly all sophomores. And so not only did they get first out of about 50 teams in the state, they are all 14 and 15 years old. So it was a pretty amazing thing. And Jessie right here was named outstanding chair for her position. So she was technically the best debater in the state of California for her position. And down there on the end, Berkeley was the best president or chair in the state of California. So I'm going to actually have him come up here and explain just quickly what they do.
Each Parley Pro Team consists of six members, like she said. There's one president and five chairs or debaters. The team is given 10 minutes to debate a topic. And a minute before you start debating, each person is given a card, and that has the topic and the required Robert's Rules of Order motions. So each debater has to do two motions. One of them is given to them. So we find out what we're debating about a minute before it starts. And after that, we are given, each person is questioned once, and then there are 2 minutes of general questions that they ask us just what or why we did certain things in our round. And then we are judged on the creativity of the debates, how well we know Robert's Rules of Order, and how we work as a team, and how the debate flowed. And yeah.
The other team members here, I know I said Jesse Paletti, this is Kenna Lewis, Bailey Rydell, Berkeley Johnston, and we are missing tonight Adriana Kaplan and Elizabeth Martin. And before we go, we also had two more outstanding things happen. Our ag welding team, also coached by Mr. Tim Fay back there, got fourth in the state of California for the first time ever competing and the first time the contest ever happened. So that was also amazing. And our livestock judging team, first time we've had one in, I think, 7 or 8 years, got sixth place out of 50 to 60 teams, and three of them were freshmen on that team, which is amazing. So we just had a really good year this year. So thank you very much.
I want to thank everybody. I think we have honored everyone, and we're going to take a short break and have some refreshments and some cake, a treat from our staff and the people that we really respect so much. So, Adrian?
There's a cake for all the winners and award-winning people out there, and there's also a birthday cake. This is Happy Birthday, Adrian and Pete. So that's German chocolate, so be sure to have every flavor.
Come back if the board members can be found wherever they are in the general public.
Do you want me to start my report?
No.
Shall I look for Marilyn?
She went to have a smoke. We're going to do this. What I'd like to do while Mr. Millar and Mr. Buckman and Ms. Dickinson are finding their way back here, if Mr. Buckman sits down, we'll have a quorum. And what I'd like to do is, I don't know if this is abuse of process or not, but I have this second, third sense, it must be because I'm Italian, that I'd like to change the order of business, even though that's not on the agenda item next, and ask if it's okay with the board if item number 10 under action discussion can be moved up to next. It's the approval of the Morro Bay High School Western Association of School and Colleges third year progress report, because there's only so much that we can take of Mr. Zotovich's contributions to the evening. And we're at that point now where we would like to, if there's no objection, have that next, Mr. Is that fine? Okay. Well, I think we have a consent. Mr. Zoldish, please, if you would be so kind as to allow us to move that around.
Sure.
It is. And, yes, come on up, and we're not going to sing Happy Birthday, thank God.
Please don't.
Okay.
Yeah. Pete Zoldovich, Morrilby High School. Good evening, members of the Board of Trustees, Central Administration, and members of the audience. In 2004-2005 school year, Morrilby High School received a six-year accreditation with a third-year progress report. This is the highest accreditation that the Western Association of Schools and Colleges, barely known as WASC, grants to any school. There are three questions that WASC asks us to answer in our third-year progress report, and these three questions are shown in bold in the report. It is my pleasure to answer any questions that you might have about our third-year WASC report at this time.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions by the board, Mr. Buckman?
I don't actually have a question. I'm continually impressed with the Morrilby High School, but I just really want to sort of drive home for the public how incredible it is to get the six-year plus the three-year. This is not the common way that walks.
Six-year plan on a wall of one particular room to try to follow it through. And it was just enormous. It was too much. So we take the six-year plan and we break it down into one-year increments. So we're on the third year of that the six-year accreditation. So the only reporting thing that they asked us to do this time was to report to them in the third year of the midway through. And they asked us just to write a report. In some cases, they would ask you to come to have a visit, and they would send one member of the team back to see the school. But in this case, they asked us just to send a report.
Okay.
So what you have before you is the report that I'm going to send.
Thank you, Pete. Marilyn?
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
I was very impressed with the report. It's thorough and comprehensive. Everything that you're involved with at Morrilby High School is top-notch from what I can see here. And the thing that I think was most impressive to me in reading through it was that how collaborative it is, that it's not a top-down approach at all, but it really appears to be a truly collaborative effort on the part of everyone on your staff and in your administration to forward moral-based success. And so I take my hat off to you, and I appreciate your effort.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the board? Pete, thank you very much, and congratulations again for the job well done. And congratulations on your birthday, and I know you're going to have an evening with your family.
Thank you, Pete.
Mr. President, I think we need a motion on receiving and accepting the report.
Okay. Would anybody like to make that motion that's suggested by Dr. Valentine?
I'll move to accept the WASC third-year progress report for Morrilby High School.
We have a motion by Ms. Rogers and a second by Ms. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have Ms. Dickinson has a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Zoldovich, for the birthday flowers. For my birthday twin.
May
20th, yes.
Thank you all very much, and thank you again. Next, we are reviewing, I think, three sets of minutes. And the first is for May 6th, the regular meeting at Del Mar. Do I have a motion and a second, please?
I'll move that we approve the minutes of May 6th.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman. Is there a second? We have a second by Mr. Millar. Any comments, any discussion regarding these minutes before we take a vote? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. The next set of minutes are for May 8th, which I believe was a closed session.
Move approval of the minutes of May 2008 meeting.
And I just have to make one. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar. Do we have a second?
We have a second by Mr. Buckman. And I wish to point out before we take a vote that a couple of things. We have to change the to approve these minutes. So I guess it'll have to be brought back to be approved at our next meeting. And I hope everybody can come back and enjoy this moment with us as we go through these meetings, these minutes again. Now we have a final set of minutes, on May 13th. Everybody was present. Do we have a motion?
I move we approve the minutes for May 13th.
We have a motion made by Adrian. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Marilyn Rogers. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. I believe at the time of the meeting there was no correspondence to share with the board. And next on the agenda is the public comment section. Is there a member of the public that would like to address any issue relative to the school district issues or business before we move on? Seeing none, we'll go into the reports. Since there are no student representatives tonight, are there any board members or staff or administrators which have reports regarding school business? Mr. Buckman.
Yes, in honor of Mr. Millar, I'd like to make a short report.
Go ahead.
First of all, Chris Unger asked me to share that he is up in Sacramento and he's advocating on behalf of the students with the Tri-County Education Coalition, and he's sorry that he can't be here tonight, but it seemed like an important thing to do. I did spend Saturday and Sunday as your new delegate to the California School Boards Association. Our meeting started at 6:45 in the morning and lasted till about 6 in the evening. I'm not going to go into a lot of what we learned about the May revise because I think Mr. Miller probably understands it better than I do, and I'm going to leave it to him. However, one of the things that the California School Boards Association did was we agreed that there probably would be a need for revenue increases in this year's budget, and we realized that that could take many, many forms. And so we spent the entire afternoon Saturday in breakout sessions working on what would CSBA see as acceptable types of revenue increases. And actually, for 200 CSBA delegates from all over the state and all political persuasions and all left and right to come together and make a decision was fairly incredible. And that decision was made. So I felt really good to be part of that. I'm very, very honored that you sent me up there. And it was rather an intense weekend. The other thing I'd like to report is last night we had the district-wide PTA had a panel discussion on homeless children, upwards of sometimes 2,000 children in San Luis Obispo County that are homeless each night. And I think on fairly short notice, Melissa Musgrave stepped in to fill a spot that was open on the panel, and she did an excellent job, and I'd just like to congratulate administration on the job that she did. And I'd also like to note that Dr. Valentine has attended two of
the results of that report, and we received a full ride, 6-year, no visit at 3 years with just a progress report, just as Morbid had. So I'd like to thank the support, again, that the board provides us and also district staff. I'd also like to acknowledge our students, one of which is in the room, and our parents and guardians, our staff, and our community partnerships for the hard work and dedication that they provide for our site. We really appreciate all the support and hard work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karen. Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, moving on the reports, I think it's been fairly well publicized that we had a very unpleasant event that occurred at Morro Bay High School today. An anonymous caller phoned in a 911 call and reported a bomb threat and a weapons threat at Morro Bay High School. Just wanted to thank the Morro Bay Police Department and the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office for just an excellent response and leadership in helping secure the campus and check the campus. You can't treat that kind of thing lightly, and it was handled with great professionalism. I want to thank also Pete Zotovich and his staff, who were excellent in locking the school down and in calming the students down and making sure that they were reassured and comfortable throughout the entire process. I want to thank Dr. Matakovich as well for mobilizing site principals, Janet Gould from Del Mar and Jim Skoulas from Monarch Grove and Doug Jennison from Baywood, all coast principals coming over to assist with the police and sheriffs in the checking of the school. And Mary brought folks from the district office as well, Greg Halfman and Martin Invick and Rita Delkas Camp and Greg Halfman and Kathy Bueller from San Luis Obispo High School. Anyway, a whole district effort mobilizing in this moment. I'm pleased, and there were dogs who were checking and securing the campus as well. I'm so pleased to report that there was no substance to the call and that kids were released at the normal time, maybe even a little earlier than the normal time. They managed themselves perfectly, and tomorrow we hope it'll be business as usual.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. Ms. Dickinson?
Reading the minutes reminded me of the resolution that we're going to have on our advanced agenda, and I just wanted to say I'm real excited about that. I consider that a very positive thing. And this past week, just thinking about, I think it's good that we be bold. Thinking about the Declaration of Independence, you know, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary to take an action, and you know how governments derive their power from the consent of the governed. And in the preamble of the United States, we the people, not we the people in the federal government, but we just the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, you know, these things that we're working for, and also the First Amendment with our right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. We have a solid history in our country of being bold and speaking up when the federal government is messing around, especially with our taxes. And so the fact that we have...
And Dana, thank you, Dana Francis.
And Frank Warren.
And Frank is here too?
Yes.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you so
much. You're being very quiet in the front row, but thank you for being so close. Okay.
I'm well behaved. That's good. Good evening, members of the board, superintendent, illustrious administrators, and support staff. I would like to bring some specificity to the board item. When we talk about that, we will be reporting on the California Healthy Kids Survey. We're focusing on the ATOD component, which is the alcohol, tobacco, and other drug component, and not on the other part of the survey that focuses on weapons and those kind of school safety issues. We have received the preliminary data for the district from West Ed, and we've gone through that. We are waiting to get the site-specific information that breaks it down so the sites can evaluate those kind of things and we can further have dialogue with those and looking at programs and plans and those types of issues. But if I could, in tonight's presentation, we're going to start off with having Frank Warren give us an overview on the alcohol and other drug component. Dana will talk to the Safe and Drug-Free School curricula or curriculums. Either one's correct. In the community partnerships that we have that address some of these issues with the California Healthy Kids Survey. So without further ado, Frank.
Well, let me get a presentation up on the screen for you, too, which will help. I'm Frank Warren, County Drug and Alcohol Services, and I'm the program supervisor there overseeing prevention programs and DUI programs, as well as all of our school partnerships, including our school counseling programs, which I know San Luis Coastal has been a terrific partner working with. I was here just a little over a year ago presenting on your last round of Healthy Kids Survey results, and at that time we had a mixed bag of results. And guess what? We have an even more mixed bag of results to talk about tonight. So we're going to go through relatively quickly some of the I would say some of the more key indicators, some of the things that we really want to focus not just the board members on, but the San Luis Coastal community at large. So quickly, we'll kind of remind everybody how this is administered. The California Healthy Kids Survey is conducted with 5th, 7th, 9th, and 11th graders every 2 years. So theoretically, you're measuring the same youth throughout their process. This year, you had your school district had a really strong return of surveys in the mid-70 percentile for 5th, 7th, and 9th. Now, your district uses active consent, which means parents have to sign a permission for a young person to fill out the survey. And your 11th grade number is around 62%. That's good. They say anything over 60%, you get a good, strong sample. You do have very good, strong samples here. For instance, though, would be that with passive consent, there are schools in the county which are bringing in, you know, in the 70s and 80s percentiles on those. But at this point in time, you have a good sample. I know your packets have this information, and I'll just briefly discuss lifetime use. This is an indicator. Fifth grade numbers, sometimes you want to lump them all together, but we're really careful here that fifth graders are asked different types of questions. With that said, you did have an increase in fifth graders reporting at least some use of alcohol in their lifetime. But you had some gains as well. Your ninth graders report less use of alcohol in their lifetime. Tobacco has remained either a steady or a decreasing problem. Inhalants have been measured for years, so we have long-term data, but you will start to see the measurement of inhalants phase as we begin to measure more around pharmaceutical use, which we know is an issue in this county. But it hasn't been tracked long enough for us to be able to tell a story statistically. And marijuana use, which we're going to talk about as well. 30-day use, the past 30 days, have you used a substance in the past 30 days? This is traditionally the key measure that professionals look at, and we hope schools are looking at as well, because this is the story here. And in San Luis Coastal's case, there's some there's one very important number, and that is your 11th graders have decreased use a significant amount in this survey here, down to 40%. That means 60% of 11th graders have not drank in the last month. And the significance of that is that we tend to kind of generalize things by saying, well, every teenager does this, and every teenager does that. Well, this is a really good, strong number showing that, no, not only do your teens not drink regularly, but less of them are as they get older in high school. Where we're careful, though, is that we're starting to see this increase at the seventh grade level. The San Luis Coastal numbers are still lower than the county rate and still lower than the state rate. But the number is increasing ever so slightly every single, of the last three Healthy Kids surveys. So we are careful about that. Marijuana use has increased slightly at the 11th grade level. All of the other numbers that you see on that slide there have stayed relatively the same. The colored numbers indicate a 3% or greater change in one direction or another. But here are some of the things that we get asked a lot about. First of all, binge drinking. Binge drinking is a serious issue. It means over-drinking. It means high-risk drinking, people who are drinking a large amount of alcohol in a very short amount of time. The good news here in your district is that you went from 30% of your juniors reporting having binge drank in the past 30 days down to 24%. That's significant. We are seeing those types of drops in the county, not nearly that dramatic. Freshman binge drinking has gone up a little. Seventh grade drinking has gone up a little. Ninth grade drinking has gone up a little, binge drinking. But your 11th grade numbers are going down. 19% have been drunk while at school. That's also good because it's down from 23%. Those are good changes. That's another high-risk indicator. It shows that a young person willing to come to school under the influence is really in need of some help, whether it be counseling or other assistance. marijuana use, and this is not necessarily area. We have a lot of alcohol available to young people. We're a wine county. We have a major university, and alcohol is not alcohol is the number one drug for adult use as well in our county. So access is not surprising. 87% of juniors, 74% of freshmen are finding it easier to get marijuana. Those are major increases over time. So the access issue is becoming one of significance to all of us, and hopefully schools are looking at this as well. Seventh grade alcohol use, as I said before, doubled over the last, but it still remains less than the county and state averages. And I think that is important. There is work being done at those levels to talk about alcohol younger, to talk about norms as much as possible, and those are all good things. Perceived harm. This is another key indicator, not just here in the state, but across the nation, where we look at how young people perceive the harm of a certain drug. And in our county, young people do not see alcohol or marijuana as dangerous as their peers do across the state. Again, part of that is cultural. The culture that we live in here is one that's very easy on alcohol. And I think I talked about that last year here with the board as well. But a good reminder, a majority of teens do not drink. 60% of 11th graders, 75% of 9th graders have not drank in the last 30 days. And so I'm constantly challenging parents and I'm constantly challenging teaching staffs to remember that when they are making generalizations like, oh, every kid does it. Oh, it's what teens do. Because in reality, it's not. And we need to help change those norms as well. My recommendations, whenever I get the chance in working with schools, and I think one of the things that your district has supported in the past now will urge you to continue to support is teacher training, staff training, how to identify substance abuse issues, how to respond to those issues. Providing substance abuse counseling is very critical to prevention as well as long-term treatment. It also lets young people know that alcohol and drug use or offenses on a campus are serious, and they're different than other offenses because there's addiction. There are family issues, behavioral health issues that come into play that might be different than other infractions which can get a young person suspended. Infiltration, being sure that all staff are speaking the same language about alcohol and drug use, not just the health teacher or not just the Friday Night Live advisor, whoever it might be. And lastly, that each school should have objectives around alcohol and drug prevention. They should be talking about changing some of these numbers and what they can do, whether working within the campus or within the community to make those changes as well. And really paying attention to transitional ages, you know, 6th to 7th, 8th to 9th are very important times to be dealing with that. As I turn things over here to Dana, one of the things that we know is that young people who use substances less do better on test scores, and there's a lot of data to go with it. And Dana's going to talk about how we know that the more assets a young person has, the better they do on test scores as well. And I'll be available for questions afterwards.
Thank you. And Dana, before you start, I just wanted to ask something. No, that was fine. But I imagine
they're the skills, they're the relationships that we want all our students to have. The more assets they have, the more likely they are to be responsible, caring citizens. And as Mr. Warren pointed out, the higher their API scores will be. And this shows you that. The more they have, the higher the API scores are. And I know for those of us who are educators, that's important too. And Frank, is my slide next or behind this one? What a minute. So this is going to show you an overview from 2003, 2005, 2007. And great things, you know, fifth graders were at 50, almost up to 60. They're still holding strong at 52. You can see the growth with the bars for all of our 7th, 9th, and 11th graders. This is good news. I don't know where my horn is. Here it is. I want to toot the horn of everybody who's showing this fantastic growth. This is fabulous. This shows that our students, and we saw it earlier with those that had Employee of the Year. What did we talk about? relations, connections. Our teachers, all the adults, the custodians, those that do yard duty, they're doing something because we're showing great growth. And these numbers are higher here in our district than the average in the state. So we have much to celebrate. Our kids are well connected. They have assets. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. Where do we go next? Or maybe questions from the board before we go next.
Yeah, could I, John? John. I'm a little bit behind on the curve here. Could you tell me a little bit about external assets? I think I have a sense of what it means, and also how you go about testing this or having the students assess their level of external assets.
Yeah, the external assets are the relationships that they experience throughout the school day. The questions that they are asked are, do teachers or other adults care about you? Do teachers or other adults listen to what you have to say? Do you feel happy and connected to school? So those are some of the questions that they answer, and they have the option to say all the time, most of the time, some of the time, or never. So the figures you see here are the students who answer all of the time. That means every minute of every day, their entire school year, they're feeling that connected. If we had the slide to show you all of the time and most of the time, you know, you'd have figures in the high 80s. So this is a high bar. That's a high bar.
And are these external assets also things like community, family, or is it you're strictly focusing on their external assets within the school environment?
Right. This is just the school, and we also have the data that asks them the same questions outside of school. They're asked that, how connected are you in the community?
Do you see the same kind of correlation to success in school to those outside the school external assets?
I don't know if we correlate it or if we look at that. But I would, what my personal answer is that it's what parents do, it's what the community does, it's what the school does. You know, the school's providing this data, but our children and students are connected to families and the community. So it's what we all do together that's going to make an individual student more asset rich than an.
And we've known that we've had this problem in our community that mm-hmm. long. It scares me that we still have a quarter of our children are still binge drinking. I think maybe it would help us if you would give a definition of binge drinking. I think it's five. Thanks, Frank.
Yeah. Binge drinking is traditionally thought of as five drinks for a male within a two-hour period, four drinks for a female. Now, depending on who you ask, you can get some variation of that. But essentially, it is. We tend not to use the term binge drinking a lot when we're working with young people. We use over-drinking. It's high-risk drinking. It's large capacities in short amount of time, raising blood alcohol content levels rapidly. But the standard definition is five in a short period of time. Those are standard-sized drinks. I think the thing you bring up about why binge drinking still is an issue is, again, back to the access and perceived harm question, whereas we have made gains. And nationally, I think people here know, I mean, alcohol and drug use amongst teens nationally is on the decline. Unfortunately, the amounts young people are drinking so for those fewer who are drinking, they are drinking far larger quantities and at dangerous levels.
I appreciate, thank you very much for that help. The other thing that is, again, it's this two-edged thing. 75% of our freshmen have not been offered illegal drugs on campus.
Right.
Well, that's good.
Right.
The scary thing is a quarter of the freshmen have been offered illegal drugs on campus.
Right.
And I just don't want us to lose sight of that as we go through this. And I'm not sure, obviously, what the answer is. But I know that we have to pay attention to these numbers. These numbers are voluntarily given to us by, in a survey
right.
where kids don't have to say who they are.
Right.
That anonymous thing.
Well done.
In an anonymous survey. And so if I'm not mistaken, we take these fairly seriously. This is not one of those things where they do a Christmas tree on the test. I mean, they tend not to. I think West Ed is pretty much determined.
West Ed
they
is,
don't lie
yeah,
on this.
These are pros. This is a well-vetted instrument. This is about the best data that we can get And I, you know, I always encourage schools to do focus groups to follow up on some of these numbers to get a little bit deeper. But West Ed has really refined this tool.
Okay. And then, lastly, if I can, Mr. President,
certainly.
The other part of this that's not here tonight is do you bring, what percent of kids bring weapons to school? Do I feel safe at school? And that part. And I don't know if there's a plan to bring that before the board or not. But I think that would be really help us as a board if we had that other data.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have a couple questions. Catherine, then Walt, then Adrian.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Warren, I'm wondering if you can tell us what thoughts you have about deterrence then for, since we are here to talk about our schools and how to make them safer, what could we do on our campuses to make it less possible that 25% of our students are offered drugs on campus?
Open discussion is always the first line of defense discussion. So I think one of the things I always like seeing is when a school is willing to have their staff trained to talk about alcohol and drug issues, and letting teachers know that there are powerful messages that they can be bringing to young people, whether it's traditionally through a health class, like I said, or through a welding class or an auto shop class.
What do you think of keeping our campuses clean by having drug dogs, for example?
I think drug dogs are a tool. I don't think they're necessarily the only tool. I think some schools have used them to strong effect. I think there are a lot of parents out there who like the idea of the safety issue of it. From where I sit, my main concern, though, is why a young person is bringing alcohol or drugs onto campus and what help they need to prosper away from alcohol or drugs. So the dogs are a tool.
Mm-hmm. Just one last question, and that is that in our sitting in an expulsion, so we become aware of the fact that sometimes kids don't recognize their problems until they're caught mm-hmm. using. And so sometimes kids actually, in retrospect, see it as a good thing that they were caught and brought to deal with their problem. What do you think, then, of the idea of using random drug testing for extracurricular activities, for athletics, for other extracurricular
activities? It's very late. And that's a whole nother. I think random drug testing is a tool that is sometimes used very well, and I think some schools have really benefited from that teaching opportunity around responsibility and the duty of testing for what it's worth. The key is what happens when you find a young person under the influence of a substance. What's the response then? I think that is a bigger indicator for me to see a school succeeding is whether or not they are responding to a young person's choice of use or need to use or addiction or whatever it might be. And testing doesn't always do that. So, again, it's a tool, but I think it takes a very wise use to make it worthwhile.
Thanks.
Walt, and then Adrian, and then Mark.
Thank you. One quick question for our administration. Do our sites include this information in the site improvement plans?
Yes, it's a required objective for all sites to address this issue using the results from the survey.
And I know in our review of the site improvement plans every year, I don't remember any specific targets like decrease, marijuana use by 5 percentage points. I don't know whether that's a realistic way to approach this, the SIP, but...
Well, you'll see in our LEA plan that we will be reporting our results from this year with targets set for the district. And so the sites use that information and then use their site-specific information to shape their program plan. If you would refer to pages 2.2 and 2.3, you'll see our articulated program that we have. That is a focus in every classroom at every level. So we do have a curricula that's set at all grade levels to address.
Would be a good way to go for a district. And I'm kind of curious about that because, we let our freshmen home phone numbers and names and everything go out to military recruiters unless the parent writes a letter, which is passive. That's what the passive one is, right? You have to...
On our in our registration material, in this, the student information card, parents have to respond to questions and they have to give permission and sign the card to indicate that they're releasing their information to such a source.
Okay, because I was thinking
that's active participation.
That's active also. Well, good. It seems like they should at least be parallel. But is there a reason why we don't just do the? Isn't the passive approach where everyone does it unless the parent objects?
Essentially, yeah.
Is there any reason why we don't want to do that with something like a survey?
Well, I had always subscribed to if it works, don't fix it. And so with our numbers, you know, if those ones that are 79, 76, there's not an indication to switch to passive, although the 62% with the 11th graders, we need to understand what that's about. And not being in the 11th grade, I don't know. They had permission from their parents, but perhaps when they said, okay, this is voluntary, did a lot of the 11th graders get up and say, no, thank you? See, it's still voluntary, even with parental consent. But we certainly could come to the board at another date and show you with slides the pros and cons of having passive versus active. But it's my understanding that if our numbers are high, this system is working. But if the board wanted more information, we're prepared to do that.
Sure, Walt.
Would it make a difference as far as the integrity of the data that if we had the system that you were discussing?
Frank, are you better? He's probably a little bit more educated to answer that one.
WestEd sets a 60% bar as their appropriate sample size. Obviously, a larger sample will always give you some degree of better amounts of data, but I think you're pretty well safe with WestEd in terms of how they use this this instrument. But yeah, always a larger sample is better in cases like this. But I think what Dana said was correct, and I want to be careful that I was explaining that schools that are using passive consent are getting higher numbers. But again, your numbers are above the threshold that WestEd suggests for an appropriate sample size.
Mark and then Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Frank, if in your response to Dr. Roger, there seemed to be a sub-answer that maybe wasn't verbalized, and that seemed to be the parent informing parents of these results. You talked about we train teachers. And what I'm wondering, this district's been very bold and very brave in stepping forward and saying we have an achievement gap and we're going to try and deal with it. And I'm wondering, just sort of out loud, sort of a rhetorical question, you probably don't have to answer this, is what do you see in other districts in terms of being brave and bold in releasing this data and involving parents and sending them the data? And is that a component of this? Because,
hi. And I did see, you know, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm thinking, that may have had that impact because it allowed teachers to start to talk about reducing the amount of drinking that was going on as well as, you know, living alcohol and drug free. What I'm seeing in other districts, though, to answer the bigger question about sharing the information is I think the most bold thing a principal can do is stand out with their checks, you know, survey and say, come take a look and come talk about it, because it's not a school issue necessarily. It's a community, family, school, all wrapped in issue. And for a lot of years, the Healthy Kids Survey was pretty much put up in front of the media as, you know, here's what's going on campus. And this is not what this measures. This measures what's going on in a young person's life. Of course, 6 hours of that for a lot of these young people is on campus. So I think there is some shared dialogue that can happen. Those are the most bold movements I've seen, as well as the in-service days. We did Paso High and Flamson last year, San Luis a couple years ago, when schools give, you know, 2 days of dedicated discussion about behavioral health issues, you can really see some changes.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I wanted to piggyback on something that Frank just shared, and that is that I think it's completely a completely appropriate educational issue, the drug and alcohol use habits of our kids. I think it's a completely legitimate supervision issue on school campuses. We are a convenient and I think an appropriate study group because virtually every child in our community attends schools, and so if you want to find out what's going on in the student's life, it's a logical place to assess the data. My only concern on this, without burying my head in the sand, because I think while we are vigilant and we are able to intervene and with students who are using drugs, my absolute conviction is that the majority of those incidents are not intervened in because we don't know about them. But my concern is that this is viewed as some generalized comment about the school itself. And in fact, the school is one of the few places in an adolescent's life where there are actually people dedicated to keeping an eye out on the students, dedicated to delivering messages regarding the harms of substance abuse, dedicated to the supervision of whether kids are using or not, imposing consequences for the use of those drugs. It is absolutely the most wholesome drug environment in our community, with very, very few exceptions. You could almost say virtually all binge drinking occurs somewhere else. It's being reported at school, but it certainly isn't happening at school, except in obviously there are some cases of that. All of that said, if you could ever eliminate drug use and alcohol use amongst our kids, I would guess that 80 to 90% of the expulsions in our school district would cease to exist.
And then I had a few questions for everyone. Are there any assumptions you can make from the students who don't take the test in terms of what that may represent relative to usage and unwillingness?
Done, and we haven't done any, I think, in this district recently, but in focus groups in the past, a lot of young people said that they were afraid they would get asked a question about something about it at home, that they would have to report about something that they were uncomfortable with. Those were from focus group responses. Again, not a clear majority. So I think there are a variety of reasons, but it's untested.
So no one's done any analysis as to the academic performance of the people who aren't taking tests, or the relationship to tardiness at school or missed days? No. In that group either?
I will definitely go look. That's something I've never actually thought to look for, is to see if there is a tracking around academics or attendance for those not participating.
Because that may say something also about the population. The next question I had was the external assets that are available at the schools. Is there any analysis done at our district regarding the percentage or the numbers of those external assets that are available for certain socioeconomic groups where there may not be a high percentage of that type of student who they can communicate with or they can connect to? Does that make sense? Okay, you have external assets you have at the schools, mm-hmm. and you have students who come from certain backgrounds. Are the external assets at the schools available to a certain number for certain socioeconomic groups?
And not others?
And the numbers that would reflect that kind of a relationship or the opportunity for that kind of relationship. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. The external assets are things like problem-solving skills, high sense of motivation, high sense of achievement.
See, but I thought it had dealt also with internal staff.
Those are internal. We're talking about external.
I was thinking about staff. I was thinking about contacts at the district, in the classroom, at the site.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If I understand you, are you saying that for some reason someone who's in a different socioeconomic status than their teachers would have less external assets?
That's a question in terms of if you looked at our external assets on the campuses at the sites and then you looked at the students mm-hmm. who may be involved to a higher degree, do we have the external assets at the sites to meet the needs of that particular group that may be underrepresented in those external assets?
Well, if I can take off my coordinator hat and answer it as a counselor at Sinsheimer, we're going to look at all the students at Sinsheimer, regardless of their socioeconomic status, and we're going to say how connected are they at school. And that's one of the lenses that I look through. So an example, we have a young man who we knew wasn't connected in the community. He seemed to be, you know, riding his bike and wasn't connected. So we got him into STAR, an after-school program. We got a scholarship for him to go to STAR. He already had a big brother in the community, which would be an external asset. We connected him with our Big Brothers Big Sisters school-based program. So we're building assets for him so that he's surrounded by a safety net. And that's just based on need. We're not targeting one group only.
No, I understand.
Other kids may be more connected simply because their family's doing it.
No, I guess I was asking about communication opportunities that may be lacking with certain students because of various reasons.
Because of language?
Whether it be homelessness, whether it be English is not the first language, whether it be those kind of factors.
Again, if I can use my own role, you know, we have
issues in terms of trying to identify interventions that way. And then the last question, thank you, the last question I had to do with what we see often in expulsion hearings is that transition period from elementary school to middle school and then from middle school to high school. There seems to be some additional challenges and problems and waiting issues for those students and what happens at those transition periods in terms of identifying those problems or those.
Well, that's something that we look at, too. You know, Martin and I can talk about the things that we're doing well at elementary. Can we duplicate it at those transition pieces? And that might be something, do we as a district say that's what we're focusing on? Or do we look at the binge drinking? When I look at that data, I imagine what would it be like if we all picked one? We picked one or two key issues, and that's where everybody put their energy. Or is it more realistic that a site would pick that? But we certainly have the dialogue. We certainly share the strategies. We have sixth grade challenge for our sixth graders, which is to help them transition to seventh grade. If I was in charge of the money, I would just do it at seventh grade, you know, because they need something like that to help them feel connected. But I love that question, and we ask it too. We do look at that.
Right. And I think there's also formalized meetings that do take place between the school sites. Staff is talking about students, at-risk students, and also advanced students. How are we meeting educational needs for the ones that are struggling and also the ones that are doing very well? And I know that happens between the middle schools and the high schools, and it happens between the elementary schools and the middle school. So there is that articulation about at-risk students, like with counselors, with teachers. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to see if there's any other questions. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, and then I was going to say the last component of our presentation, again, the slide's been up there for a while, but to maybe articulate a little bit about the continuum of the education pieces that we do have in place, and then also some of the relationships that we have with the outside agencies, and to talk a little bit about some of the other funds.
Just briefly, because it's self-explanatory, from K through sixth grade, we have curricula that helps our students to stay safe, to solve problems so that there isn't conflict, that there isn't violence. We are about to initiate in fall of 2008 at grade 5, Keep a Clear Mind. This will be our first alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention curricula. We do have DARE, but since we receive safe and drug-free school monies, we're charged with only implementing those that are research-based. So we've made a decision to implement this at 5th and keep our great relationship with our DARE officers at 6th. Project Alert at 7th and 8th grade is also substance use prevention program. And then 9th through 12th, our teachers and administrators did a fabulous job of infusing that curricula throughout the school day. And that addresses drug prevention and violence prevention. And then a really great thing, and I wanted to toot the horn for all the people who aren't here. My horn's not working, but I want to toot the horn. You're going to look at a list of our community partnerships, and I think we all know that it's not programs, that it's the people that this list represents. These are the people that work with us, that connect with us at the school, limited in place. Did I get it? Did I answer it? Anyway, the monies are used to decrease those numbers that you saw about drug use, and we take a close look at how that money is spent. So it's on the curricula you saw earlier, but it's also on some of the services that you see listed here. Yeah.
And then as a wrap-up, as I said, we've just received this, you know, the district-wide data. We're hoping by the end of May that WestEd will provide us with the site-specific data. We have shared already at a principals meeting some of this information. Also did get into some of the violence issues, weapons, those type of things. Obviously, we'll get this in front of the principals again when they have information that's kind of personal to them, have those professional dialogues, and look at our strengths, look at our weaknesses, and hopefully let them develop some of those things at the site level, see what it is they want to do, expand on those partnerships that they have with agencies on issues that are relevant and important to them, and then also what things do we think we all can benefit in mass. So that was my attempt at a wrap-up and a mop-up.
No, that was terrific, Martin. Thank you, Dr. Valentine.
One real quick comment, and that is that one kind of beneficial byproduct of the unpleasant events at Morro Bay High School was that of necessity, every student and every locker and every classroom was searched, every backpack was searched, every pocket was searched in both the book locker and gym locker, and no one found as much as a cigarette. Kind of an intro. It was one day in the life of, but yeah.
So that should be in the survey also.
Yes.
You know, one more question, and there may be others. Is anything done in terms of structure for peer groups at probably the high schools or the middle schools in terms of the students buying in to the effort to reduce what we're talking about? Is there any peer group involvement by students, any buy-in to this?
There are a number of programs that are linked to that group of partners that you saw there, one of which that our organization does is the mentoring, Friday Night Live mentoring, which is high schoolers who are matched at San Luis High with Laguna 8th graders and at Morro Bay High with Los Osos 8th graders as well. And you will start to see as in each of these programs, including the youth task forces and the coalitions, they are bringing projects typically on campus that band young people together. You know, I'm 3 days away from the 24-hour relay challenge where I have 30 young people who have been working together now for almost a year and a very specific project that is not necessarily school, but it's youth development. They are learning incredible skills, and because they're around people who are concerned with the alcohol drug issue and they know that's what the end result is about, they are gaining that type of knowledge. And I think there are, without formalizing it, there are within all of those partners and a lot of these classrooms, those peer relationships around this issue are built. It's just not as formal as it might have been 10 years ago when there were very specific peer education organizations and peer leadership groups, et cetera.
So those have a benefit? Those efforts have a benefit?
I think tonight,
education?
If you were to look around this
time in helping them identify issues, what happens when you guys leave here and you end up at Laguna or Los Osos Middle School? How are you going to help each other, support each other? Kind of identifies those areas of weakness and concern, puts it all on the table, and then hopefully puts them in kind of a supportive role to where their fears are brought out and to the front, and they're given some skills and how to respond to situations and feel like, hopefully, they're connected to their peer groups. And that's one thing we see in some of those studies, too, and we ask a lot about those assets. How do you feel about staff and your relationship with them? Those are typically very positive and very high. When you start asking questions, how do you feel about your relationships with the people around you of your age group? That's where they struggle more. So these are some of those areas in which challenge days and other tools like that are beneficial, help them strengthen up their relationships with their peers.
Adrian?
Tomorrow at Arroyo Grande High School, we're having this secret assembly, you know, with everybody out there on the football field. Mm-hmm. Do you know how effective those every 15-minute kind of big virtual
events? Well, that's
events?
My staff that conducts those. And this is something that we've changed over the course of a number of years. San Luis High was one of the first schools to ever do the impact assembly of every 15 minutes. And I'll tell you the same thing I'll tell the young people tomorrow when they're finished and they get to the retreat site. I'll tell them that the assembly that they just took part in made absolutely no impact on that school. And they'll all look at me shocked and dismayed because they put so much time into it. And then I'll explain to them that what happens from that point on will make the difference. The 40 young people at Arroyo Grande High who have been working tirelessly on putting this event together are gaining incredible skills and capacities that will keep them away from alcohol and drugs, and then those who participate in the retreat aspect of it. And then we've now instituted follow-up components as well. And San Luis and Morro Bay High were two of our first schools to use this model in the last 3 or 4 years. So we are seeing effects from that. The assembly itself is great, and we may get one or two kids to think twice. But really, when schools are putting their efforts behind the long process of planning, implementing, and evaluating, that's where we're really seeing some major changes.
Because that is student-led. The students yes. have put that together.
For the first time at Arroyo Grande now. This mm-hmm. has typically been an adult-led program. So this year we're very excited. And then we have another one, which I won't mention because this will be on the air. But right. we have another one next week as well.
Yeah, I knew this would be on the air after it's happened, or I wouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, and I won't say anything about the okay. other one, too.
Thank you.
But again, I will, while I'm standing up here, will comment that you now have a relay planning team chairperson at the table, which I was excited to find out about. And the reason that Rick Robinette received an award tonight, I think, and he's already left, was because he is going to be there Saturday morning bright and early. And so if you want to join in on the fun, that is this weekend. And I know a lot of you will be there to help serve dinner and work from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. So I'll see you then.
Okay.
No? Okay.
Thank you very much, Frank, Martin, Dana. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much for the presentation, for being here and helping us with that. Thank you. Item number three, Ms. Delkiskamp for the annual student wellness report.
The student wellness board policy 5030 to you some of these resource binders that we've put together so that you can review them tonight. One of the main focus topics for our district wellness committee this year has been to increase the understanding and support of this policy. And so to that end, we compiled this resource binder, and you can go ahead and pass it out if you want, Joyce. It is our Wellness in Schools handbook, WISH. We had to think of something catchy that we could remember. And in the board item, we delineated the different sections that are in the binder. And we also translated many of the sections into Spanish so that it would be accessible to our Spanish-speaking population also. The purpose of this handbook is to provide our teachers, our parents, and our staff with practical resources to help us implement this policy. And yesterday was our last meeting of the year, and we've already generated our topics for our next meeting in the fall in September. And our goal is to continue to improve the communication of this policy within our school sites, but also to investigate how we can monitor the implementation of this policy. It's been very collaborative work, and we want it to continue that way.
Rita, thank you. Any questions? I was going to ask, are there any plans to poll students or to get some feedback data on the impact it might be having in a clear way in terms of their diet changes or their health changes or their other changes?
That is part of, we've only talked about that informally at our meetings, feedback that our committee members get from students, what they see at the sites, what they get from the teachers, our administration, who also sees what happens as far as changes in fundraisers and so forth. We haven't done an official survey, but part of and a big part of our topics for next year are include that. How can we gather information from students, from parents, from staff?
Do you think doing that will involve the students more in the patterns that the wellness group wants to see start developing? I mean, to educate the students, is that going to be part of that?
Well, you know, part of it gets to the students, and you'll see we have a whole section on classroom parties, and we've already prepared the email that's going to go out on June 2nd to our principals and to all staff, reminding them of here's our board policy and encouraging people that if they're going to have celebrations, that you know, preferably non-food. So, but as you mentioned, students, when I was listening to the ag students here today, I thought, we need to reach out to them. They can come and tell us a little bit more about the farm bill and about some of the other items they mentioned. So, yes, I think that would be a good goal to include more students.
Catherine?
Oh, I just wanted to thank you for including information in here about the farm-to-school program and the Central Coast Grown organization getting more local produce in our schools. And I know each of the schools are looking forward to work.
Compliant item because our students enrolled in the year-long PE courses were not receiving 400 minutes of PE instruction every 10 days. And the reason for that is that year-long courses at San Luis Obispo High School are 2 trimesters long, not 3. And so to address this noncompliance issue, the state directed us to submit a general waiver request. Attached is our second renewal of this request. Okay. I also wanted you to note that we provided you with a revised page 4.2 to indicate that our California School Employees Association and our Teachers Association have both taken a neutral position on this waiver request, and our Service Employees International Association have taken a position of support. So this item is presented for a public hearing tonight. There's no board action that's required, and then we'll be bringing this item back for action on June 3rd.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I'll open this up to the audience, the public, to see if there are any comments. Please come on up. Yeah. Good to see you. Just go ahead and identify.
Good evening. My name is Jim Nett. I'm proud to be a teacher here in San Luis Coastal. Been here for many years. I'm here partly tonight to address my concerns with this issue. I'm a little disappointed that we're here again, applying to the state for a waiver for a situation that I think could have been corrected if we did athletics after the school day. But the fact that this board has allowed this to continue in their vote earlier this year, I think we're now in that situation again where we have to apply for a waiver to continue basically offering students a program which allows them to do athletics during the school day instead of PE classes, other electives, other things that they could be taking during the instructional day. And as you weigh that, I'm also here because I was part of a committee which Ms. Matakovich facilitated this fall, where the association members and some PE teachers got together with Will Jones and members from the high school, and we worked on the union's approach to this because we were opposed last year, and worked on some mitigating ideas of how we could put out proposals which were taken back by Mr. Jones to the high school and how they could implement some of the ideas of that meeting. I think there were 5 or 6 things that we agreed on. If they implemented that, in that case, the union would not be opposed to this waiver. So I'm hoping as this comes forward for your action next month, maybe Ms. Matakovich could bring up the list of those items and address how they have been implemented at San Luis High. I think that'd be a good thing to go over before it's considered as a done deal.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim. Is there any other public comment on this item? Any questions that the board may have for staff or administration or Ms. Delkiscamp? Catherine?
Well, I feel like we should hear from Dr. Matakovich then on the question that was raised, if you're prepared to speak to that.
Or I was going to say to bring that up to have that brought.
Item. I see.
Because I think the question would be, and if the board is interested in that, would be the items of mitigation that were discussed. Items, we have one here, Adrian.
I thought this waiver was related to the fact that we had a trimester schedule more than when we have athletics during the school day. Is that true?
Thank you. Any other comments? Then I think next item, item 5 and 6, will both be public opportunities to review and comment upon
those negotiation reopeners, Mr. Robinette?
Sure. We are ready to engage in collective bargaining with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. We'll be commencing that in mid-June. And we received from Terry Wellborn, a field representative for the California Teachers Association, a list of initial proposals. The board also has their list of initial proposals, and this requires two public hearings for any public comment.
Okay. Thank you very much. Therefore, the board will open to public comment anything related to these two items, the reopeners. Okay. Seeing none, then the public comment portion will be closed. Any further questions regarding these by the board? Okay. We'll move on then to the resolution item number 7. And this has been prepared by Julie Lang, and I believe it's going to be
Did we just do two public hearings at once? I thought we did a public hearing on the CTA's openers, and then we do a public hearing on item 6, which is the districts.
We kind of bunched them together, but do you want to separate them?
I don't think that's appropriate to hold two public hearings on two things at the same time. I think you ought to have a public hearing, close it, have another public hearing.
Okay. So Mr. Millar has requested that we have a public hearing on item number 5, which is the reopener from CTA. Are there any? Well, they might have been confused because they were both bunched together. So are there any comments regarding the opener by our California Teachers Association? Okay, seeing none. We'll go to item number 6, and that's the negotiation opener by the school district for a public hearing. Is there any comment from the public regarding the school district's public opener position on negotiations with CTA? Okay, seeing none, any other questions? Thank you, Walt. And then we'll move on to number 7, which is a resolution prepared by Julie Lang and I think to be presented by Mr. Miller. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'd like to ask the board's authorization to do a little housekeeping on our delegation of authority on signatories for our bank accounts. When Julie Lang came on as Director of Fiscal Services, we passed up this particular item, and we are going back to correct it now. So what it reflects is that Julie would become an authorized signer on our local agency investment fund documents, allowing her to transfer money as she can with all of our other bank accounts.
Move approval of resolution 15-07-08.
And we have a motion by Mr. Millar regarding that resolution and a second by Ms. Dickinson. Open for discussion 3. So we'll do them one at a time or all at the same time. We probably have to do them one at a time because there's people that have to abstain. So the first request for salary for permissible absence involves a person who's not here, so that's helpful. So do we have a motion and a second for Mr. Unger on item number 8?
I'll make the motion, please.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second. Second by Ms. Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Item number 9. Let's see. No, we have another one. Let's see what I missed.
I have two more.
Okay. Okay. So we have a second motion regarding the absence for Ms. Dickinson. Do we have a motion?
Well, I'd like to ask a question.
Listen, should we do the motion then have the question? Do you want to do the question first? Have a motion?
Want to take Adrian before Mark?
Yeah.
Adrian's in the future, Mark's in the past.
Okay. That's okay. Do you have a motion?
On Adrian?
Yeah. We have to do that, too.
Okay. For Adrian Dickinson, I would move approval of the requested, let's see, how would I phrase this, permissible absence.
Yet to happen.
On June 2nd.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Catherine. Discussion?
Yeah, I actually have two questions. First, I'm not sure about the appropriateness of taking a prospective action on something like this, but that's a minor point. The other thing is, it seems to me that we're expanding this type of pay in lieu of attendance. Because I've never seen one where it was because somebody was working and they couldn't be at the board meeting. So I guess that's what my question is about.
Okay.
I miss a lot of board meetings because I'm working. I mean, not a lot, but the ones I miss are because I'm working.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Now we have 5-1. I'm sorry. Was there a nay? Okay. 5-1. Actually, 4-1, because you abstained. We have another request for absence regarding Mr. Buckman. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion that we pay Mark for the May 8th meeting.
We have a motion by Ms. Dickinson. Do we have a second for that motion?
I'll second the motion, noting that Mr. Buckman was absent because he represented the board at a welcome reception for Cuesta College's new superintendent.
We have a motion by Ms. Dickinson and a second by Ms. Rogers. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that passes 5-0, I believe, with one abstention. Okay. Item number 9 is the action discussion portion, instructional materials adoption, new modified secondary courses for 2008-2009, and a busy night for Ms. Delkus.
For the string orchestra, Morrilby High School, Slo High School, the budget, $15,600. The funding sources, for San Luis Obispo High School, $5,500 one-time visual and performing arts funds. Morro Bay High School, $8,500 site general fund. I'm wondering, did Morro Bay also have visual and performing arts funding that they used for something else, or how did explain the difference?
That's correct. They both had visual and performing arts funds, but in order to fund this class, they chose different budgets.
So site general fund, Mrs. Delkuskamp, what does that mean?
It's part of the funding that goes to the sites. Some of that money, well, the principal gets it and distributes to different departments.
It's site discretionary funds? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Delkuskamp? Seeing none, thank you very much again. Item number 10, and this will come back on the agenda item for a vote by the board. Item number 10, we've handled already. And item number 11, we have a discussion about the 2008-2009 budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. The governor released last week his addendum to his January proposal for a budget, known as a May revise. And the May revise's intent is to update the public about the current condition of the revenues and expenditures of the state. And the update in May, while the revenues and expenditures are still short of expectations that he established in January, there was an uptick in April that caught up a lot of the shortfall. So the actual revenue and expenditure numbers that were released in the May revise weren't necessarily all bad. However, the governor has changed his stance on the budget for the state of California and altered many of the proposals that he made in January and has now thrown new ideas into the mix to be discussed. I think that today Dr. Valentine and I were able to attend a conference put on by School Services of California that analyzed the May revise that the governor put out and talked about some of its highlights and lowlights and shortfalls and other things that were associated with it. I think that they characterized the reception that the May revise is getting in Sacramento this way. They said that the Democrats have been protesting, the CTA has been protesting, and the Republicans have a plan to hold harmless education. So what they are talking about, in essence, is that even though there hasn't been much positive reception for the governor's plan, education isn't taking any hits from any of the different factions within Sacramento. So it looks like the education part of the budget might be one that won't suffer mightily because of the crisis that the state is in. Now, I'm not sure how they're going to do this, but seeing that the education is a huge hunk of the budget, how they hold us harmful of educational funding being so much less, then it just doesn't need to be suspended anymore. By the numbers, it's already brought down to a level that he was trying to get it to through the suspension in January. So he has achieved a purpose because the economy of the state of California is so weak, it automatically has shorted Prop 98 funding, and thus we don't need to see a suspension. The key components of the governor's budget, I think, can be categorized in that he's got flexibility built into it. So he's going to give education choices about how to spend restricted dollars, unrestricted dollars, how to mix and match perhaps some deferred maintenance, the shifting of home to school transportation and other aspects, the details of which we can talk about at your leisure. There is a proposal from the governor that he's going to, it's been characterized in a number of ways, but perhaps the best way is the lottery revenue generation proposal. And he's going to sell the lottery and take back revenues from it on an annual basis. And in those revenues will be a pledge that should the revenues from the lottery games fall short, that the piece that goes to education will be forgiven, and education won't get its money, and that money will be used to pay the buyer of the lottery games the amount of money that's promised to them. So we look upon the lottery proposal as being basically flawed, and we have a number of other perhaps pulled from the air type proposals that the governor is proposing that don't necessarily carry a whole lot of substance to them, but present a picture that perhaps people would be more hopeful about than factual in their belief that it would happen. The LAO has also come out with an alternative budget this afternoon, and its key points are that it would increase Prop 98 funding by $900 million over the governor's piece. It would reduce current year Prop 98 funding. It would do current year cuts in Prop 98 that would be seamless to education, but would reduce the floor of Prop 98. And they do it through a number of different unspent categories and other things that don't cut our particular funding. Eliminates the governor's proposed cuts to revenue limits, special education, and all categorical programs. The LAO proposes targeted cuts to specific programs, such as the PE incentive and the high priority schools grant. It maintains funding for deferred maintenance. That's one of the flexibilities that the governor gave up. Provides $250 million in mandated cost funding, which the governor isn't. Like the governor, the LAO proposes to use public transportation account money to fund home to school transportation, and recommends against two of the governor's flexibility proposals: the 50% reduction in district's economic reserve for uncertainty. What he's basically proposing is going from 3% to 1.5% in a regular school district. It's a one-time cut. It's smoke and mirrors. It doesn't mean a whole lot. In our proposal, he was going to suspend Prop 98, cut revenue limits for revenue limit districts. This would have resulted in basic aid districts sharing the pain of revenue limit districts. In the May revise, what he's doing is he's not paying the district's COLA, which isn't a suspension of Prop 98. It's called deficiting the revenue limit. He owes it to them at some point in the future, and it's not a cut in basic funding. That does not call out for us to have a fair share of pain. That's a significant, it's a significant savings to us in our budget. When we prepared the budget, we projected a $950,000 fair share of pain component. We would have paid for that $1 million, let's call it $1 million just for the sake of the statement. We would have paid for that $1 million by giving up categorical program money, since that's all we get from the state of California. There is a component in the governor's budget that cuts categorical programs by 10%. It'll give them a COLA of 4.54. it'll cut it by 10%. The net effect is 6.5% reduction in categorical programs. We have calculated what was a $150,000 reduction in categorical funding in our budget that exists today. We have calculated that the new number will be about $280,000 because of the addition of that $1 million back into the formula that is going to require a reduction in its funding. So now we have a categorical shortfall in all programs across the board. 6.5% amounts to a total of 286. So the two significant factors in the May revise, number one is we no longer have a fair share of pain. Number two is more categorical cuts across the board. And special ed, actually, great news on the part of our special ed funding is it's not great news because they're going to short the COLA on special ed, but they're not going to reduce it by 10%. It's going to be a static line, straight line funding from year over year. So what we get this year, we're going to be getting next year in special ed. That was a huge piece for schools. It's kind of like you're going to break both of our arms in January, but now you're only going to break one of our arms in May. So I'm not so sure it's great news. I hate to categorize it that way. There would have been better news if they just had done what they're supposed to do. But, of course, the state hasn't done that for years, so that's just wishful thinking. I'm not sure. Was there anything else I missed yet that you wanted to bring up? Mandated costs. They said keep filing claims. Someday we ought to get our money. Okay, so we're going to continue to file our claims. Summer school funding. That's a really bad news. These hourly programs have been just shredded in the governor's budget. Absolutely shredded. What was a 12% deficit for summer school is now a 43% deficit. We're going to be down to $2.33, I think, in our funding for an hour of summer school. It was $5 an hour not too long ago. So it's just been shredded at summer school. The at-risk funding is down 36% deficit from a 20 pass. It's an alternative to the sale of the lottery. Neither one of which is received very favorably by anybody in Sacramento, nor is it received by the Legislative Analyst's Office. So the only thing I can tell you is the 1 cent sales tax increase presents a revenue increase of $6.6 billion. So it's pretty big, and it goes to the heart of the shortfall in the state budget. But it doesn't seem to have very big legs right now. So you got something, Mr. Bruckman?
If I might,
sure.
And it may be wrong, and you may have mentioned it, because this is so complicated what he's done, it's almost impossible to keep up with it. What I understand is tied to the lottery, which was, by the way, guaranteed always to come to education, and that does away with that guarantee. Tied to the lottery deal is if the lottery at some point does not earn enough money to pay off the bonds that the governor wants it to, it will revert then automatically to a 1 cent sales tax. And this will be put before the voters. In a way, that's really bad because the lottery was guaranteed to public education. What's really interesting is we now have the third Republican governor who, faced with a fiscal crisis, is now talking about a tax increase. So Reagan, during his period, did a tax increase. Dick Majan and Wilson. So this will be the third time. And he's just done it where he's going to put it on the decision will actually have to be made by the public rather than him actually really making an executive decision.
Marilyn.
Thank you. well, I have several things. Mr. Miller, did I understand you to say that there was going to be some flexibility in the categoricals?
Yes, there is a proposal there's many flexibilities built into his budget for education, and it's
this
something
is
that
the May revise now.
Yes.
The governor's May revise, not
yes.
The LAO.
No.
Okay.
The LAO has some categorical flexibility also. It's a little bit different than what the governor is proposing, but essentially what they what they want to do is place certain categorical programs into a block. Okay, so similar programs will become mega items now, and they will give you the flexibility to transfer 20% of the total of that mega into something else. And an example would be, we have home-to-school transportation encroachment of $1 million. Okay, so we support our bus transportation system with general fund dollars of $1 million. We receive $600,000 from the state. What flexibility allows us to do is take some categorical money, up to 20% of this block of money, and transfer it into the home-to-school transportation program, relieving some of the general fund unrestricted dollars for other purposes. So it's a substitution of restricted dollars for unrestricted dollars. Unrestricted dollars are very powerful because they allow us to spend it on anything we want. And restricted dollars are very focused dollars. So it gives us flexibility to use restricted dollars on unrestricted items.
Okay. Thank you. And then I had written down here with regard to summer school, how does that, if at all, thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Any other comments, Mr. Miller, on the budget? And then Dr. Valentine, I'm sorry.
Just that we will be bringing to the board at both meetings in June a budget proposal that's based upon the May revise. We've been holding off on staffing decisions, particularly regarding temporary employees folks who are, well, they're temporary employees, but they're folks that are in categorical programs as well as folks that have temporary contracts for other reasons. We're going to be working to try to develop the concept of maintaining current levels of services as adopted in the strategic plan. And as close as we can get to that, we think that's the shape of what we'll bring to you next meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions, Catherine?
I do have a quick question then. Does that mean that that will allow principals to start interviewing for replacing retiring teachers?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Miller, you're still lit up. Thank you for that information. Questions? Thank you. We'll move into the action consent portion of the meeting, and if any board member would like an item pull, please let me know. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 13, acceptance of donations. Number 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of adult education classes for 2008-2009. 17, approval of the 2008-2009 community-based English tutoring plan and application to participate. Number 18, approval of international student exchange program. Hearing no request to pull, can I have a motion to approve 12 through 18 on the action consent, please?
I move we approve action consent items 12 through 18.
We have a motion by Ms. Dickinson. Is there a second? We have a second, Catherine Eisenwright-Rogers. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you. And then the last item before our adjournment is the advanced agenda. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I'm wondering if I can find support among my colleagues to bring back the California Healthy Kids Survey in full so that we get all the sections of it so that we can act as a board with the data that's in that report. And maybe as a side idea, at that time to hold maybe a study session or to host in a future time a public forum where our staff and maybe staff from West Ed and Frank from Friday Night Live can come and work with parents to understand the severity of what's going on in our community.
In the courtroom they call that a complex and compound request. First step is
step
to
one.
Bring back the report. And I guess my question would be, do you want it brought back in a Friday pen on the agenda item, from what I understand, is the Friday packet? Or, Mark, do you want to clarify that?
I think we can just do that administratively.
I'm sorry, please?
We can do the Friday packet.
Okay. Just as an example, in the 2005, in the full report, there's one chart, percent of students who feel very safe at school. And among our 11th graders, only 29% responded that they felt safe at school. I'd really like to know whether that's changed or not. In terms of weapons on campus, we have reports of students in 9th grade that have carried a weapon, knife, or club to school, 9%, carried a gun to school, 3%. And that was back in 2005. So I think that this is an important item, so I would at least like it as a Friday packet.
I think the Friday packet is everybody's comfortable with that. So a full report as part of the Friday packet. Okay, thank you, Mark. Any other future agenda items, Catherine?
Yes, please. Following an expulsion hearing, I had an opportunity to talk with Chris Unger, and he and I were both discussing deterrence on our high school campuses and whatever happened to the drug dogs that were used on campus. And so I had an opportunity today, following reading about the Healthy Kids Survey, to talk with Mr. Zotovich and Mr. Jones about their feelings about the use of drug dogs as a deterrent on campuses. And they were very interested in our support and looking at that as a deterrent. At the same time, I'm also looking at random drug testing for extracurricular activities. And so I'd like to propose that we put on the agenda as an advance agenda item discussions of deterrence of drug possession and sales on campus using drug dogs and random testing.
Marilyn?
I'm wondering if I remember correctly that there is some question about the legality of drug dogs on campus, as well as if we were to drug test.
There's been several cases in the last couple of years, and they have narrowed the scope of the allowability of drug dogs on campus. You essentially have to produce evidence that you have a crisis, that you have a drug crisis on your campus that's going to require the interdiction of some drug dogs, and that this is the only way available to address that crisis. There's a number of other restrictions that have been built into the drug dog issue of late. It isn't like it was in the past, where all you had to do was not touch a kid and then they were allowed to do whatever it is they do. Now the scope is very narrow.
Okay, and then with regard to random drug testing, would you be proposing that we randomly test all students?
The discussion I had with the principals was that it would be used for extracurricular voluntary activities, but across the board, not just.
So you understand
athletics.
That would be band, choir?
Band, choir, FFA, random.
Everybody that participates in extracurricular activities.
That was their proposal, yes.
Mitigation discussion. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody was comfortable with the direction we're taking. Is it a Friday packet to distribute the information about the discussion relative to the mitigation requests and what the result of those requests for the mitigating factors are or will be? Is that?
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking with that suggestion to attach it to the item itself, because we have our summary statement from our committee work that we said we would follow through on. And so okay. Just so you have the full benefit of the committee report,
so,
along with the
okay.
Waiver request.
So
for
that
discussion.
It'll be on the agenda item?
Yes.
Okay. So it'll be discussed in terms of the factors. Okay. And then the second item I had is in the Friday packet on May 16th, during a Monday meeting that is a regular occurrence with Dr. Valentine and the clerk, Marilyn Rogers, who wasn't there, but Walt Millar was there by telephone, although his telephone connection came after this discussion, just to make it clear, because Walt may not remember this, although I do say things that I say Walt should remember, and he shakes his head. There was this comment about the meetings with public officials, the public edification effort that was in the Friday packet on page 2, and I wanted to ask the board's pleasure at whether you wanted to come back as a board item to discuss, or you want to be advised by Dr. Valentine about meetings that will be scheduled to discuss this, that no more than three board members can go to discuss it, how you'd like to proceed with that? Okay. Then if there's no strong feelings one way or the other, I would suggest that Dr. Valentine and I proceed to discuss what this may look like and present it to the board and then have a further discussion at that point. Okay. All right.
I think our balloons are sagging too much.
Yeah, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Okay. Any other advance agenda items, discussion? Seeing none, is this an appropriate time? There's a smile on people's faces for the adjournment. Thank you very much, everybody, for being here.